Okay, I'm going to be talking about my paper on hybrid touch interface PretaVote. I'm Chris Conane, and I work a postdoc on the Trustworthy Voting Systems project at the University of Surrey. So just to give you a quick overview, it's going to be a very brief introduction to PretaVote because James has kind of covered that yesterday during his talk on the VEC approach. Then a little bit about the motivation behind this work, and then introduce this hybrid touch concept, and then explain the two implementation prototypes that we've developed before going on to discuss a little bit about summary and future work. So just to remind you of voting in PretaVote, you fill in a ballot form, you detach the left-hand side and you destroy that left-hand side, and then you submit the right-hand side to the system, typically via a scanner, and then there's some form of OCR, possibly handwriting recognition, which then captures the vote, submits it to the web bulletin board, and you get back a nice signed receipt, which you can then check has been published on the right-hand side on the web bulletin board. So that's a kind of typical PretaVote ballot form. This barcode's much bigger than it is today. It's a lot smaller now because it only contains a signed serial number as opposed to all the ciphertexts. The key thing is the randomized candidate ordering. And when I'm talking about PretaVote here, I'm talking about traditional PretaVote in terms of the paper-based scheme, as opposed to what was presented yesterday. And it has some really nice properties, which are difficult to get in other situations. So in terms of privacy, the right-hand side, once you've destroyed your left-hand side, doesn't reveal how you voted. So when you're walking around the polling station waiting to get it scanned, it doesn't matter that anyone sees it. And more importantly, no machine in the polling station learns how you vote. So you have this really great privacy angle on it. And you also then get the end-to-end verifiability. So voters can check the inclusion of their vote in the tally, and then the third parties can check that each operation has been performed correctly. And you also get these pretty good strong integrity guarantees from the mixing and the decryption with the proofs. But there is a slight issue in terms of accessibility, because fundamentally it's a paper-based voting scheme. You have to fill out a paper-based ballot and then scan it in. So that doesn't give you great accessibility. And the randomized candidate ordering can in fact make it slightly worse than existing paper-based schemes. So to frame that kind of in a UK sense, we have really poor accessibility in voting in the UK. We don't have electronic voting. It's pretty much entirely paper-based. And the first attempt at making any form of accessible voting device was a tactile voting device, which was introduced in 2001. And it looks a little bit like this. And they actually physically stick it onto the ballot paper. And it has an embossed copy of the candidate name, and in a box where you have to open it and then mark your X. It's incredibly problematic. Typically when they remove it, the ballot paper might get torn. There's all kinds of privacy angles to it. So we don't have that great an area of accessibility in the UK anyway. But there is a Polls Apart campaign, and they campaign for better accessibility within UK elections. And after each election, they produce a report, and they work quite closely with the Electoral Commission. And they've managed to get it into the requirements for any future voting scheme to be trialled, even in the UK. You have to demonstrate how you would make it accessible. So you can't even run the trial unless you have a plan for how you make your system accessible to at least some, if not all, accessibility users. And we got invited to this roundtable discussion after the last general election. And it was an eye-opener for me in terms of A, how many people and how many different accessibility areas we needed to cover, but also the pressure to introduce things like internet voting, voting on mobile phones, because they produced great accessibility, but they were really bad at privacy. And trying to get that across to someone whose only goal is to gain accessibility is really difficult. And there is a real danger that they could gain some traction towards these somewhat poor voting schemes because they have great accessibility. And the recommendation that came out was to ensure that disabled people can vote independently and in secret by diversifying voting methods. And I look very much at the word secret there, and I think it should be secret from the machine as well. But the difficulty we often have is that we have to make a pragmatic choice. If we want to make the system accessible, we sometimes have to compromise on privacy. So we generally have to, if the machine's going to help someone vote, it's going to have to learn how they vote. So the challenge we thought was, can we develop a front end for PretaVote, which has these nice privacy and integrity properties in a normal paper-based scheme, can we develop a front end which would not compromise privacy but still provide some accessibility. And there had been previous kind of suggestions and ideas on this, possibly to line up the left-hand side with a screen and then a touch screen and then fill your vote out on that. That's really not usable. It's certainly not accessible, expecting someone to try and line up carefully a piece of paper with a touch screen. So that's where the kind of hybrid touch concept came from. And the idea was is that we maintain this concept of two halves of the ballot paper. The left-hand side would still be paper, but the right-hand side would be a digital rendition of it. But the only requirement would be that the voter just has to place their left-hand side anywhere on the voting surface. And then the location and orientation would be detected and the appropriate right-hand side would be rendered. So the vote is in fact filled in via touching or interacting in some way with the machine, but the machine still doesn't learn anything about your vote because the candidate ordering is still randomized, so you aren't revealing any additional information. So we've got two different ways of doing it. One is a touchscreen and a surface computer, which I'll go to in a bit more detail. So we can detect the location and orientation of that left-hand side and then render the right-hand side appropriately. So main advantage is that the machine doesn't learn how you vote, but it also means because you're now casting your vote on a machine, you can add all kinds of additional accessibility equipment to that. You could add larger buttons, sip and puff, voice control, because you've now got a much greater flexibility. And one of the really nice features is that you get automatic validation in terms of a correct vote. So you can check that the vote's been filled in correctly. You can warn the user if they've overvoted or if they've undervoted. And you can actually step through the whole process with someone without ever breaking their privacy. And it also doesn't involve any scanners now. We don't need to interpret human handwriting or OCR. And potentially we could have a single unified interface for both disabled voters and able-bodied voters. And the voting process now completed entirely within the voting booth. So there's no two queues in the polling station. There's no potential bottlenecks on scanning. So the first implementation was on a Microsoft Surface. I'll say now that this was before they decided to release a tablet called a Surface. So originally it's a Surface computing, and that's the paradigm we're using. So it's known as a natural user interface, and it can basically interact with everyday objects via something called identity tags. And it consists of being able to detect multiple touches, so up to 50 simultaneous touches. So it potentially could be a multi-user experience, but we're using it in a single user environment. And you do this object recognition via something called identity tags. So to give you a rough idea of what it looks like, this is the internals of a Microsoft Surface. You basically have this top here, and then there's a standard PC inside. So that's why you can connect all these different devices to it, all these accessibility devices, because there's just a USB port on the edge of the table. And then inside you have various IR emitters, a projector for actually displaying the screen, and then these four IR cameras. And they're the parts which do the work in terms of detecting touches and these identity tags. So that's a copy of what you would see on the Surface, and then you can see here that you've got additional information which allows you to say which race is completed, how much it's completed, and you can display any information here you want and then various different buttons or help files, and you can in fact have information which is contextual to what the person is doing at that time. So the ballot paper is really easy to construct in terms of the Pret-a-Voter ballot. It's basically a standard ballot with an additional identity tag on the underside. So it basically contains the same information we would normally have on our right-hand side barcode, but it's now on the back of the left-hand side. So this would be an example one. You have a ballot like that, and then on the back you have this identity tag. And it's this identity tag which does all the location and orientation work. So this is an example of it in action. I'll say now that I was very grateful for Tala's research, who allowed me to play around with their Surface computer for the day to actually test whether this would work. And you can see that you've got the left-hand side here, and then the digital right-hand side is lined up. And you can have multiple different ballots on the same screen or on the same surface. And if you move these around, it will track in real time. So the ballot stays complete as you move it around. And you can see, and it's probably a bit too difficult here, but it will tell you that this one is completed, whereas this one's only partially filled out. So you can do checks before the person casts their vote to actually make sure that it has been completed and warn them if they have undervoted. But there are some disadvantages to it. They're $10,000 each, and they are large. These are basically a coffee table. And they're immobile. I can testify to that for having had to move it through the Tala's office in order to be able to actually work on it. And there's no easy way to adjust it in terms of height, which is a real issue, because if you have someone who is in a wheelchair, then they clearly can't interact with a tabletop. So we wanted to look at what other options are there. Can we do the same thing but using a slightly different technology? And so we looked at projected capacitors, particularly the 3M multi-touch, which is one of the first screens to handle up to 20 simultaneous touches. And it's similar to the technology you see on your mobile phones and your tablets. So basically, projected capacitance works by having two layers of perpendicular wires, and you apply a charge to those wires, and at the points where they intersect, you get a capacitance. And then when you bring your finger within the electrostatic field, it causes a change in that that capacitance, and then you can detect the touch. So we thought, well, we could use this to identify the location of the touch, and if we had a series of different touches, say a template, we might be able to identify an actual location. So the difficulty really is, how do you simulate a human touch on a piece of paper? Because humans are pretty good at being conductive, pieces of paper aren't. So we wanted to look at, well, could we use conductive ink, foil marks on the underside, to then simulate these touches? And currently we use a template, rather like if you imagine a gesture you'd get on a tablet or on your phone. We have a rectangle of a particular size which we look for, and we use that information to then determine the location and orientation. So to give you an idea of what it would look like, you have this foil-backed piece of card here, and then these are conductive foam pads. There's two reasons for this. One is to increase the conductivity, and the second reason is you need to keep this foil-backed piece of card far enough off the screen that it doesn't create spurious touches in the middle areas. And from that information, we can locate the left-hand side and then display the right-hand side. So that's what it looks like in practice. It's just a piece of standard card with these little pads stuck on it. And that's it working on the actual screen. So again, as you move it around, it will track it in real time and locate where it is. You'll notice there's not much of a user interface on this, but the same user interface we had with the Surface can be rendered onto that screen as well. But we're still working more in terms of getting this into a nicer way of constructing those ballot papers. So it's definitely cheaper, and it's definitely more flexible. But the issue is that it currently needs to still scan some form of barcode to acquire the serial number. We're looking at whether you could have some kind of sparse matrix of these conductive pads on the underside to give that same information, because obviously we don't have the identity tag which we would have on the Microsoft Surface. So basically we've moved the work here to being a ballot paper being more difficult to construct. We need to find a better way of constructing those ballot papers than using little conductive foam pads, because that's really not practical on a large scale. But we're looking at the moment at using this conductive ink, which has some scope, but it's really about whether we can get a density high enough to simulate the touch. There also is another nicer feature of this, in that it doesn't involve any form of camera in it. So even though the Microsoft Surface can't see through the top of the Surface top, because the glass isn't entirely clear because you need to project onto it as well, there could be a concern that you had some privacy issue on that. So we wanted to look at an alternative way of doing it as well. And probably just as we were testing this, Microsoft announced that it was also releasing version 2 of its Surface, which is made by Samsung. And there's two big advantages to this. One, it no longer contains the cameras. And two, it's now only 103 millimeters thick, which means you can mount it on an arm and you can adjust the height, you can adjust the location of it. It's still scarily expensive. It's dropped in price by about $500 or something, which makes no real difference to the fact it's still costing close to $10,000 each. And the delivery is expensive, oddly. But you can move it around much easier. So we developed this interface, which effectively provides the same accessibility without compromising on the privacy. But it is only a proof of concept. It works on Microsoft Surface and the multi-touch screen, but it does need more work. We recognize that. This is more of a first step towards providing this accessibility in an end-to-end verifiable voting scheme. So there is more work to be done. We do want to polish the user interface, because we basically need to get usability experts into it, because we're doing this from a technical point of view. They will have a better experience in the usability angle. So where we place the buttons and those kinds of information isn't going to be something I know, and so we need to kind of collaborate with them to get a better user interface. We also want to reduce the size of the conductive pads. It's quite difficult to construct that ballot paper at the moment. It's basically a manual task. if we can do conductive ink printing, then that would work. But it also looks like the newer version of the Microsoft Surface might provide some really nice, exciting new opportunities as well. And we do want to do user trials, but that requires funding on a much larger scale. Okay, any questions?
Have a time scale in mind where you might consider deploying this?
No, not at the moment. I mean, that this is, it was very preliminary stuff in terms of when we were doing it. It was difficult because we don't actually have a Surface ourselves. So testing it was pretty difficult because we were using just a simulator. So the first time we ran it was on that one day we had at Thales to get it working and actually check that it worked in terms of theory. I think if it's going to take considerably more in terms of developing the user interface to make it usable in that sense and get the usability experts on before we'd want to go near deploying it.
Do you have any feel for what fraction of users who can't use existing paper-based systems could use yours, and what are the classes of users that work and don't work, and do they have to be able to put pressure and things like that?
They wouldn't need to put pressure because you could adjust it with buttons or whatever. If they wanted to use speech, you can interact using that. So all they need to be able to do is place the ballot paper on there.
That's it.
And then whatever way they would normally interact with a machine, they can, we can.
So it's pretty much any disability?
It works well for most, except you still have the issue with visual disabilities in that they need to be able to read the left-hand side somehow. They need to be able to get the candidate information from that left-hand side. So you even need to use the same embossed typing or braille, which means it's not ideal for that particular group. It would work in the sense that it would work as well as the tactile voting device we currently have in the UK.
And does it doesn't need to be horizontal?
It depends on, you can have some angle on it, but obviously you need to keep it as reasonably flat so the piece of paper doesn't drop off.
Right, that's what I was wondering.
But you actually have more scope for not keeping it horizontal with the conductive pads on the touchscreen, because they've got a lot more grip on them than a piece of paper.
I don't know what the numbers are, but it seems to me a lot of people who are in wheelchairs are going to need it fairly vertical.
Well, you can basically bring it in like that.
Depending how far, how big it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You can kind of adjust it to a level where you.
I see.
I think there's scope for moving it into a smaller form factor as well. In that, to be honest, we don't need a coffee table size screen for voting.
Thank you.
But that's the only equipment that's kind of available. But yeah, that's a good point.
I think this is interesting research. The reality and the practicality of it remain to be seen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I have a question regarding the extent to which you have to trust the underlying technology. For example, if the barcode indicates the permutation, if you will, of the rows, why can't my software have a Trojan horse in it that looks for the candidate I want to win and simply messes around with the unpermutation of the permutation?
The barcode doesn't contain the permutation.
It doesn't. Okay.
No, so it's a standard Pretovoto barcode. So all it contains is the serial number.
Only the serial number.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it reveals no additional information than you would reveal to the scanner during a Pretovoto scan.
Okay. So somewhere in there is something that says what the permutation is. If it's completely static, then it's easy to rig.
It's the same with the Pretovoto, because you've got the randomized candidate ordering. You're submitting the serial number with the preferences. And then when you do the mixing and the decryption, that's when the permutation is revealed.
Ah, okay.
So it's exactly the same in the properties of Pretovoto.
Yeah.
So you don't have, that's the key point in that the machine doesn't learn any permutation
right.
and doesn't
okay.
learn how you
Fine, fine. You have in fact addressed that point.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay, thanks.